Hey guys, Mark from the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast here. Just dropped in at the beginning of the podcast to remind you all that if you want the inside scoop on any news or any deals that we've got going on at the shop, do follow us on Twitter at GAK_co_UK. You can also follow the podcast guys individually. You can follow me at Mark_random. You can follow Matt at Matt_nightsea. You can follow Jay at JAYBN1. And you can follow Joe at Joseph_900. Hello and welcome to the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast. I'm your host Mark Packham, who is with me this evening.
Hello, my name's Jay. I'm the assistant manager here in the guitar shop.
This is the 99th podcast and you're still messing that up.
The short stop.
Who else is here?
Hello, my name's Matt and I am the manager.
And I'm Joe and I'm here for bass related issues.
We also have egg-free mayonnaise.
Yeah, egg-free mayonnaise is joining us. This is the new regime, isn't it? Pizza before we start.
We've got sweet baby Ray's barbecue sauce and some Nando's.
Nando's, peri-peri, yeah.
The condiment selection at Packham's is dreadful.
That's because you don't need condiments.
All three of these condiments are stuff that I have brought over the last few months and left here.
Right, do you know what condiments are?
There's not even any ketchup.
To put it into a guitar analogy, condiments are a Kayla Bridge.
No, they are. Not.
Technically, they might make it better, but, you know.
No, that's a ridiculous statement.
This barbecue sauce has high fructose corn syrup. That is bad.
Yeah.
It tastes good though, doesn't it?
But it comes with your free choice of topping.
The topping is also poisoned. Anyway, how is everyone?
Good.
Yeah, great.
My new guitar's here.
Yeah, go on then. So you've been, what I can see, you're desperate to tell us about it.
I am. I mentioned on the group, and I got hold of a 1961 SG Junior.
It's very nice.
All right.
It's banging.
Yeah.
It is totally
in the words of J. Cross.
So it's incredible condition.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's never had a neck break, which is the first
thing. It's never had a neck break?
No.
Oh, I thought it had.
No.
Oh, wow, okay.
Everything's original apart from the wraparound bridge.
Okay.
But I will hunt down a vintage one.
Do it.
But then just wrap around bridge, whatever. They sound good.
Yeah. It is pretty stunning, isn't it? It's just like super light and
not
just super resonant, just not
really,
heavy.
Really light. So I carried it. Matt decided to
drop the ball.
Matt decided to take a half day at work today. So I carried I carried Matt's guitar from the shop to Mark's house in a Hiscox case. And it weighed. It was a pleasure carrying it.
Did at one point you think, did I actually? Have I dropped the guitar at some point?
I was like, I wonder if I should just go home.
Yeah. Take
this guitar.
Yeah, it's just one of those ones that you just like.
If you hadn't bought it, I would have.
I think someone would have bought it no matter what. I mean, it's basically, so it's come from a really good friend who is also a customer who's a long time session musician, and it apparently came from Ray Davies in the Kinks studio.
Okay,
so he may well have played it, but unfortunately no.
It is the song that it's the guitar he wrote You Really Got Me.
Imagine
that's not true.
It's the
guitar that he used to bash the speaker.
Okay.
That's why the wraparound bridge got replaced.
What do you think?
That's also not
61. I mean, that's done pretty well for 50 odd years.
Well, me and Joe were in the shop on the way up here, and we were like, I said to Joe, it was a 61, and he went, just stopped and went, oh, that's really old, isn't it?
It is really old.
But that's first production year.
Yes, yeah. So old. But that's so old.
But I mean, it just imagine
I sound like Jay then.
But yeah. How, do you know what I was thinking when
so
I was doing?
So yeah. Old.
What I was thinking is it's weird to think that when they made that and when they made the SG in 61, they were like, Les Pauls.
Yeah.
We ain't selling none of these.
Well, yeah. Like,
and then they bought out that and you think, God, that's an amazing guitar. But then they were like, in like the 70s, they were like, actually, we should probably make a few of these, more of these Les Pauls.
Because people keep buying them secondhand. It's, like, even in the shop today, one of the people we work with who are, and I will name no name. I mean, I don't know if this is a if this isn't something that people know about. So the Les Paul, I mean, most people who are guitar nerds will obviously know this, but perhaps other people won't. Like, the Les Paul was discontinued in 1960. Mm. And the new Gibson guitar was the Gibson Les Paul solid guitar, mm-hmm. which was produced in 1961. They did the Les Paul solid guitar standard and the junior, which is the one that Matt's got. And Les Paul didn't like it. And he fought to get, but it had Les Paul written on the headstock.
Up until 63.
Is it 63? Is that how long it took him to get his name
back? That doesn't have Les Paul on it, though, does it?
That does.
It does, doesn't it?
It's 61, so it says Les Paul Junior.
Okay, yeah, wow. Yeah.
And someone at the shop was like, why does it say Les Paul? I was like, how do you not know this? Like, surely you know this. But like, it is a very strange thing that they did just go, no, I'm not going to make any more of these. That's
it. They just did it and didn't tell him.
Right.
I think it's the...
And then he got it. Okay.
I thought it had something to do with the fact that he couldn't... He was getting on a little bit and didn't want the weight of a full Les Paul.
No. It was just that Les Pauls weren't selling. They just... Yeah, they
it
were...
Wasn't until, it wasn't until, like, the British Blues
what
revival...
What were people buying?
I don't know, Strats and Tellys, maybe?
Strats, maybe not. I think they were just expensive.
Yeah,
oh, really.
I think they were expensive, and people didn't maybe necessarily. I mean, you've got to think. So, 58, 59, 60, like what. In terms of the music.
Fender brought out loads of stuff in that time.
Well, you think what sort of music was popular, especially in the 50s, and, you know, especially things like Elvis, who was like one of the biggest, you know, Scotty Moore was playing like a big.
295.
So, you know, there was a big hollow bodies and a lot of tellies. It's a lot of twangy sort of country.
Yeah,
and you know, and Strats obviously with the Shadows, and it wasn't until the mid 60s when Clapton and, you know, Peter Green
and
that played
and Motown were all sort of Strats and tellies as well.
Yeah,
I mean, that stuff's kind of getting towards the end of the 60s anyway.
Well, start of the 60s.
Yeah, like mid to late and something like that.
But, you know, so, I mean, but it's weird to think that the Les Paul came out, well, I suppose the Les Paul and the Teddy came out the same year.
Yep.
But then maybe Fender got one step ahead and they made another model. But it's weird because all the numbers related to cost price at
When did the Jaguar and the Jazzmaster come out?
The Jaguar, the...
First Jazzmaster's 59, isn't it?
Yeah,
really.
The Jaguar's
62.
So Fender had kind of, in that sort of maybe 5-year spread, Fender had released a lot of stuff.
I mean, even like we had a quick chat before we came on because all we ever do is talk about guitars. We had a quick chat between us about a friend of mine's got a Music Master. We did do a podcast on this. Do you remember what year the Music Master was released?
Oh, I don't. Oh, no, it's really early,
isn't 1956.
Because I think that what they did is they did a range of student guitars.
That's a guitar that they did. Yeah.
I think of it as being like the student guitar of like the 70s.
No, yeah, they released it. It came out the same year as not the first Strat, but like the iconic Strat, you know?
I had that 64 Music Master I had for a while.
Yeah.
Was, I mean, they were definitely like a junior guitar, basically. You could feel like it was so small, the neck was so thin. And as much as I loved it, they were just a bit rubbish.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I've been looking for a Music Master bass recently.
They're kind of a bit of a different thing, really. Because they didn't come to the 70s, did they?
Yeah, but the recent Vista series, the ones, they did Shell Pink, Surf Green, a blue and a black. And occasionally those they come up and they don't go for huge amounts of
what
money.
What blue was it in the 50s?
The Squire Vistas.
Oh, sorry. This sort of leads on to a conversation that me and Joe were having earlier in the week. He's thinking about getting his 50s P bass refinished because he'd done like Fiesta Red. I mean...
Well, it's a poly Fiesta Red.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it now, though, because you put some sort of finish remover on it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I spent a long time sanding it down, and then I put, what's that stuff?
Teacup
all over
but,
it, so yeah.
But, so, Joe wants to get it refinished, but doesn't want, but, and I think that's quite admirable. You don't want to move away from anything other than a 50s colour, because it's a 50s P bass.
Yeah, so I can't choose metallics.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously...
Burning Mist is probably my favourite.
What I mean is, why would you?
Right. But here's the thing. The problem is I can't have light colours because I don't want a light colour. I want a dark colour. And that, for the 50s, Sunburst. Eliminates all the pastel colours.
Black?
All the... Well, yeah, basically, I have a choice of black, Sherwood green, two-tone sunburst.
Sherwood green's metallic, isn't it?
No, they introduced Sherwood green as a straight Sherwood green first. So you can get Sherwood green. They did it on the 55 P bases.
Okay.
Could you get it... did they ever do it in No Castor Blonde or Natural?
Yes, you can. Butterscotch. Yeah, you
can, Butterscotch Blonde,
The problem being there, though, that the bit of wood underneath your finish might not look... Great.
I have the same problem with sunburst, with the two-tone sunburst. I've got to wait and see what the wood is like underneath, which is why I'm having Sherwood green as a backup with a matching headstock.
You're getting it back in Fiesta Red.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. I can't do it because it's maple neck, and I kind of think Fiesta Red is a rosewood neck colour.
No.
No, I disagree.
Yes, it is.
You're crazy.
No, when Squire did the classic vibe, Fiesta Red... P bass, it came with a rosewood.
They
neck.
Put the wrong neck on it.
But that was a 60s bass.
Yes,
yeah, but Fiesta Red isn't really a 60s colour. It's
not
50s
especially.
Colour.
I just think those light colours always seem to work better with darker necks. Any of the pastel colours, any of the surf colours or seafoam,
you're crazy.
Better with a rosewood neck.
Crazy.
Olympic white with a maple neck.
Why can't we
do white or black? Because I can't bring myself to spend £300 on a nitro refit. Get black or white.
Oh no, because it'll be good. But I reckon I just thought, why don't I do a custom shop Strat? Like shell pink over Daphne blue, or Daphne blue over shell pink.
Oh yeah, that
with
I mean,
a relic matching headstock.
I'd love to get shell pink. I'd love to get shell pink.
I like anything.
Just do it.
Yeah, man.
No, but I think I'd need a rosewood neck again.
Yeah,
and here's the thing.
I kind of agree in that.
You're crazy.
I've got an anodized scratch plate as well, and they're like £60, and
yeah,
I'm kind of like, I want to use it, and the only colour that anodized scratch plates work on is two-tone sunburst.
What about the Jamaskis in vintage white?
Yeah, that is pretty good.
That would look good. Yeah, yeah, vintage white with an anodized guard.
Yeah,
nice.
But again, it's white. I can't bring myself to do it. To do white, spend £300 on getting a base refinished in white. I can't do that.
Just get a racing stripe in it.
Yes. I did consider racing stripes as well. Do you remember the Mustang base, the pawn shop Mustang base? They did in Olympic white with a Lake Placid blue speed stripe.
Yeah.
That was cool. I could do that.
But what I want someone to do is on the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group, do a Photoshop mock-up for Joe Branton of a P-bass, 50s P-bass with a maple neck in some different colours. Someone with some Photoshop skills, do that and give Joe some options. Also on our Facebook group, please submit your questions. And that's what people have done over the last week or so. We've had loads of questions.
Oh, that's great. Really good segue.
The thrust of today's podcast is just doing some questions, I guess. Just answering questions from the group.
This is great. You've made it sound as though it isn't like a complete cop-out podcast. Like we didn't have a topic. That's good.
We talked about sauce.
Yeah, yeah, that was the topic. The topic's done.
Oh, right, we're done. We've just moved on to questions.
Yeah, the high fructose corn syrup.
We talked about
sauce.
Sweet baby rose squeezable gourmet sauce.
This was the condiment special.
That barbecue sauce is really good.
The sauce.
I didn't try it.
No, see, you're like... So,
oh, well, is it a vegan barbecue sauce?
Pretty much all, I think. Yeah.
I thought barbecue sauce had meat in it.
That's barbecued horse.
This thing here, because it says the slogan on this is the sauce is boss. When we say it, it sounds ridiculous. When my girlfriend says it, it rhymes.
Sauce is boss.
No. She says like the sauce.
My sauce is boss.
The sauce is bought. My girlfriend's from Philadelphia.
The sauce is
boss. That was Jay Cross's American accent, everyone.
I mean, obviously, I can't do it.
The sauce is boss.
But like, it's funny because
the sauce is boss.
Yeah. Okay.
Like that. Is that how you go?
That's how she talks.
That. Oh my God, Jay! You're making me so happy now. I want to kiss your lips.
Wow.
Give us the first question.
Matt says, aside from the shortboard, do you know if Fender will be releasing any other Mustangs in this anniversary year? I have no idea what the Mustang shortboard is.
He means Mustang amp.
No.
That's what
not.
I thought. And
no.
I thought by shortboard he meant
None of you done any reading on this? I mean, in fairness, this is part of the shortboard is part of the Fender... 10 for 15.
Is it?
Yes, it is. But it was the last one. It's number 15.
Okay.
So you probably didn't get that low because I think the second to last one was the double cut Telecaster.
Oh, yeah.
We were all like, whoa! So it's part of the... it's part of the 10 for 15 range, which is, we touched on it a couple of weeks ago. Fender are doing some limited runs of, they're doing 10 guitars, which will only be coming out this year. There's the double cut Telecaster, which we've gone on about. There is, Matt, I don't know, I remember.
So there's the surfboard Strat?
There's the surfboard Strat, which is the longboard.
Okay.
So that's sort of...
which looks well cool.
So it's yeah. the long... It's the longboard Strat is what they've called it.
It doesn't look good, man.
It looks amazing.
I'm not 100% I'm into either. It. It's a natural finish, and there's like a surf stripe that goes from the bridge all the way down to the...
Well, it's like seven pieces of wood, isn't it? It's built like a surfboard.
Right, okay.
So
and the back great. Of it has got like a... The back of it has got a clear back guard.
See, that bit I wasn't that bothered about.
No, no, no. And then but the shortboard is essentially a Mustang that's... designed in the same manner, so it's a natural sort of rolled finish. It's not, there's no like hard edges on it or anything, and yeah, I mean, it looked, I thought it looked very cool.
Yeah,
it kind of looked like do you remember the modern player Jaguar P90, the modern player Jaguar 90s?
Okay, mm-hmm.
That had the again, they had that like quite a roll, that the edges were quite rolled, and it was
yep.
like a matte finish, and that's kind of what this looks like. But it's a Mustang, and I think they've got P90s actually, if I remember
okay.
correctly. I can't remember offhand, but they do look very, very cool. In short, I think the answer
board.
To the question is no.
In short,
I don't think they are doing anything else except possibly the 65. Reissue, which is the Japanese
that kind
Mustang,
of comes and goes in and out of the catalog,
yeah,
doesn't
which
it?
Which is the one that yeah. I had for a while, and actually that sort of brings us back to the conversation we were having earlier.
Mm. Barbecue sauce is great.
Barbecue sauce is balls. So the Music Master was the neck pickup, single neck pickup, sort of quote unquote Mustang. Then they did the Duosonic, which was the two pickup, quote unquote Mustang, and that was discontinued. And then in 65, that body shape made a resurgence with the Mustang, and it had like a redesigned trem, which the shortboard does not have, if I'm not mistaken.
I think
it's a hardtail. I think it's hardtail on two P90s.
Oh, sweet! That would be great. That would be my one thing I don't especially like about Mustangs changed.
Obviously with my one, I mean, when I bought the Mustang, I don't think I took the tremolo arm home. I decided to buy the Mustang. I took it straight upstairs to our guitar tech. I was like, "Can you lock down this bridge, please, mate, and stick some 11s on it?" And he went, "Yeah, sure." And I think he put the tremolo arm in, and I took the tremolo arm out and left it on his desk, and that was the last I ever saw of it.
I agree.
The tremolo on the Mustang has always sort of let it down, but. I think the shortboard looks very, very cool. I assume the 65s are still in the catalogue.
They're kind of just drifting in and out.
Well, I mean, it's Fender Japan, isn't it?
Has anything happened with the Mustang? What have you got in the catalogue? Because this year, on the bass front, all of the basses are gone now.
What, like the Mikey Way?
But the Mikey Way is the only Mustang you can get now.
A little bit different though, isn't it? Because it's got that pickup and...
Yeah, a little bit different because you've got that humbucker, and of course it's large flake silver with the black speed strap, is, you know, and it's Mikey Way's bass, so you have to kind of like that sort of thing to buy it. But, yeah, they've discontinued the Japanese... 65 reissue. And they've discontinued the pawn shop as well.
Have they discontinued the pawn shop as well?
The pawn shop was the best thing. I mean, it's the greatest idea to put a Teddy bass pickup in the middle of a Mustang. It made the Mustang like a viable choice for all
you.
Bass players. Yeah, for me. Yeah. for drivey bass sound. It was a totally wicked idea.
I don't actually know what the deal is with, because I think the modern players were discontinued.
Yep, they're gone.
Which was a shame because they were quite cool. I mean, that was what I think the Fender should be doing with the modern player range. It's, you know, doing something a bit weird, like taking a guitar that's kind of popular.
Well, that's kind of what they do, really.
Well,
with
I mean, I've never particularly got on with the Tellies or Strats, but I think the offsets that they've done. So, like, I think the modern player, the Jaguar P90 was really cool, and They did a Jazzmaster HH, which I think was a real, like, you know, neat way to do it. It's the Jaguar HH, I think, filled the gap very well for someone who wants that offset body shape but needs the longer scale length.
Yeah.
You know, because you can get Jaguars with two humbuckers, like the classic player range
is the
classic player HH. But you know, for some people that short scale is a deal breaker. And so I think that's where that worked really well. So it's a shame if they have completely discontinued the monoplayer Mustang. But I mean, the 65 Mustang is great. I mean, I really wish I hadn't had to sell mine, but, like, you know, I needed to
buy some
skinnier jeans, I think it was.
Tailor-made.
I'm really disappointed that a Mustang hasn't been introduced on the modern player range. For base. In fact, there are kind of there's one thing that occurred to me the other day that Fender are really missing a trick on, which is in my opinion the coolest base, not necessarily the best, but the coolest base that Fender have ever done was the Tele base, as in the later version of the Tele base, because when they first introduced the Tele base, it was actually a 51
base that they just renamed
and reissued. But the latter one, where they invented the humbucking pickup and stuck it right in the neck position, that was such a cool looking bass. And also, who doesn't like slab bodies? Do any bass players you know, Mark?
Yeah, I don't really like them.
Oh, that's unbelievable. Of course. Why did I even ask? Everyone except for Mark.
Oh well, no, but I'll tell you.
Bodies are cool.
I'll tell you for why.
You tell me for why.
Indeed, being a punk bass player, my arm gets cut up enough just on a regular contoured P bass, and having a slab body one, it would just be wrecked.
Yeah, okay. I mean, but people that play bass properly really like slab bodied basses.
Fair.
Do you remember the video that Joe did of the Mike Dern?
Oh no, that was me.
No. Maybe it wasn't the Mike Dern.
Yeah, no, I did.
You did the first video.
There have been two Mike Dern since we've been working there.
The video that Joe did of the Mike Dern, where he was like, "Oh yeah, what a great, like, this is the thing about this bass. It's a great slab body." Went up on YouTube, and the first comment was, that contour on that there, mate.
It was a little contour. One contour, come on. It wasn't even like, I said it was slab, because it was. It had one contour. The 55 had slab-ish. Two. So, you know, it was contour-ish. Well, the 55 had three, so it was only a...
So, in short, we don't know about any new Mustangs coming out this year.
No, I think probably the answer is no. The 65s are probably still going to be available. Buy one in white, because I regret selling mine.
There we go.
That's the finish I want to get a Music Master bass in.
Yeah.
Because they're all yellowed up now.
Yeah. Oh, the 70s in white look
bang
tidy. Sam says, regarding the Roland Blues Cube you were talking about in the podcast, what's the difference between the 60 and the 80 apart from the obvious, like the tremolo and effects loop and extra 20 watts? Any difference in sound? Do they take the weird tone valve things? Matt Knight.
I mean, he has listed all the differences there. So
and yes,
but in terms of sound, they aren't going to sound that much different, because there's less variable in terms of tone when you're looking at solid
state. But I think
they're
way more giggable.
What, the small one?
No, the bigger one.
I think I think having the tremolo and the effects loop. I think the tremolo more than anything on the 80 is nice, but they will both take the little weird tone
cube
thing.
Nodule.
That's not what it's called.
No, I don't know.
I've forgotten the actual tone capsule.
Tone capsule. Have you ever done a time capsule?
No, maybe I'll do one with this. I'll put it in a time capsule.
Put the tone capsule in a time capsule.
And maybe it will create some sort of weird interplanetary thing.
Why, have you done a time capsule?
No, I never have, but you know.
Maybe we should do
Blue Peter. Of course, Blue Peter Mark is done a
time capsule.
I did a time capsule because of Blue Peter.
Of course.
Why don't we,
when?
What year?
It was something we did with school, but the thing is, I didn't bury it. I just put it in a box and it went in my parents' attic, and I found it the other day, and it had some Trio wrappers.
It had some what?
Some Trio? You might be too young for Trios. Had some Trio wrappers.
Trios.
Yeah.
Trio. Like a trio.
I remember that advert.
It had some of those and some football stickers and a Beano magazine.
Any good ones? I can't remember. Stickers.
Just some random ones. Yeah, probably 90. When was the first Premier League year?
1990. Oh, I don't know why I'm looking at you. 90,
no, I'll tell you, it was.
Hello.
I think it was 92.
It was 94.
Yeah, 94
is 94.
Yeah. Yeah, because Leeds won it in 93.
Yeah. And that was anyway, the last year. So yeah, that was the time capsule.
I never did a time capsule, but I do remember, and like, I've been going back to my parents' house quite a lot. They live about an hour away. I've been going back there quite a lot recently because I've got so much stuff there that I need to, like, sell. But I've been thinking about going to try and find the tree that I remember when I got for my... It was in 2002, which would have made me 15. I got a penknife for my 15th birthday, and I remember the first thing I did was go and climb a tree and carve JC02 big letters in this tree. And I've been thinking recently, I should go and try and find that tree, see if it's still there.
Never use the penknife afterwards because you just made it completely blunt.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's utterly, completely broken.
Utterly useless, basically. So we're saying that basically those are the differences. 20 watts, bit of extra headroom, and trem.
Fex loop. But
both take the time,
is this
time capsule.
Fex loop?
I don't think so.
Oh, right.
Will says, how far up the fender strat range do you have to go to get a nitro finish? I was pretty surprised to see that the American standards still use urethane. Mm-hmm. What's the first guitar that has got a nitro
American
finish?
Vintage.
No. Incorrect. The guitars...
FSRs.
You get FSR stuff Mexican. Lower down than us.
They're
you?
Not yeah. necessarily FSR, actually. So there's...
this annoys...
There's... Oh. No, Joe. There's... No. You need to... Shut up. There's... I think five instruments, I think, that you can get from Mexico that have a nitro finish. There's the Rodeborn series. So the Rodeborn, there's a Rodeborn Strat, a Rodeborn Tele, and a Rodeborn Jazzmaster.
And jazz bass and P bass.
Nate Mendel?
It's not nitro.
Really?
It's not
Is
nitro.
It not?
No, definitely
Matt Knight,
not.
You've got the phone in hand.
100% it's not nitro.
Okay.
What I can tell you
there's,
yeah.
Nate Mendel.
Yeah.
There's also the Classic Series Jaguars and Jazzmasters. So the Classic Series Jazzmaster comes in surf green and looks wicked. There's the Classic Series Jaguar that comes in Fiesta Red and looks even better. And then there's also, they've just released a Strat. Which comes in Sunburst, and we've got, I think, one left each of the limited runs that they did in Surf Green and Daphne Blue
with matching
headstocks.
Oh.
There's also a Telecaster, a 50s Tele, and there's a 60s P bass. I'm sure there's a 60s P bass.
The Nate Mendel is not nitro.
I told you, the Redekin shows it off because you get the little, where the little dings are, there's like the white undercoat shows through.
Right, okay.
I'm sure there's a 60s P bass that isn't in the Rodeborn series.
Really?
You should, I think it comes in white blonde.
There used to be a Japanese 60s P bass, but
no, this is a Mexican one. Almost 100% certain.
Wow.
There is.
You need to look into that.
There is. No,
I think it came. I think it's come out at the same time as these.
Oh right.
Like
okay.
a brand new one. Yeah.
Okay,
cool. Yeah.
I'm really tempted by.
I'm surprised that there is and that I haven't heard it because the 60s P basses are my favourite P basses.
I'm sure it's a new one that came out at the same time as those Jaguars and Jazzmasters and Strat.
I'm super super tempted by the Daphne Blue matching headstock because that's the Beatles Strat. That's like the Strat that they. That's it, basically.
Oh, really?
Like
is that where it came from?
Yeah, I think they had 262s.
Yeah, they bought two, didn't they? Yeah.
And it's the one that later got refinished with George Harrison's ridiculous psychedelic
paint job.
Fool! Oh, no, the Fool.
He just started listening to the Cream
no,
a lot. And
the Fool was the guy...
The Fool did paint that one, yeah.
Yeah, it was the guy that painted it, not the name of the... Yeah,
no, artist, the Fool it? Painted the SG.
Yeah,
George Harrison painted his own... Yeah,
he was like, I'm not paying for that.
Yeah.
Can't do it myself.
It's got a little picture of a man with a bow tie and it says something like, hey, Rocky.
I'm assuming he was also extremely high on LSD at the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's a distinct possibility.
He was like, I'm just going to paint it blue. And then when he finished, it was just all weird swirls.
Is it like that fella who takes various drugs and then
paints
a self-portrait?
Of himself, yeah.
But yes, after that, the Mexican series, you do then have to go to the American Vintage series, which we've listed, I think, only just a couple of weeks ago, actually.
Last week?
Yeah. In the tellies, you've got the 52, the 68, 68.
I think as much as good as a 68 telly would be, I think most people would be like, 68?
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough.
Bit of a weird one.
Yeah, so 58, 64, I think.
Oh, and then there's the 1987 reissue.
The year I was... Is it in memory of me?
It is.
In memory of me?
It's in memory of you, R.I.P. JC.
So yes, then the American vintage stuff, and then you go to the custom shop as well.
But you can have some custom shops in Europe, though.
You can choose, can't you?
You can choose.
So, but you know, yeah, I think it is a bit of a shame that the American standards don't come with a nitro finish. But at the same time, the American standard is kind of, it's, I mean, it's standard. It's like, I, you know, it's not.
I think you have to remember, if they did it as a standard production run on the thousands that they produce, they would cost more money.
You've got to remember why this is why a Les Paul costs what it does than a Strat.
Well, I mean, and also for me, nitro and polyurethane, neither is inherently better than the other. Like, no, if you want a finish that really kind of like pops and you want a real modern looking finish, then probably polyurethane is the way to do it.
Well, that's absolutely right.
Again, you know, it comes back to that thing of the standard is like setting the new modern standard. So that's why they use the urethane.
And the reason I don't like the poly finish on my P bass is because, you know, I've probably played, I don't know, 300 shows with that bass and it still looked brand new, and I hated that. I hated that it didn't show off how much I'd played it, which is why I sanded it down.
A lot of players do want that. They want the guitar to still be pristine.
Yeah, people
which
who want
you
just to be shiny.
You wouldn't get that with nitro.
People like to use instruments might want them to look a little worn, but you know, yeah.
Joe Branton. Scott says, does anyone use inline jack-to-jack connectors for linking pedals as opposed to usual patch cables? It's all about real estate, and for some of the chain, there seems a lot of extraneous cable flapping about. Are there any sacrifices in just using inline? So what he's talking about are the connectors that are just two jack-to-jacks back together.
Yeah, the sacrifices, personally, I think they sound rubbish.
Okay.
I don't like them.
Sound rubbish.
Yeah, I don't think they sound as good as a cable. I think there's a certain warmth you get from using cables compared to those straight to, and to be honest, I just think that no two pedals really sit together.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's certainly an issue, isn't it? I mean, you can get the Moore do a. I really enjoy saying that word.
Moore. It's a good word, isn't it?
But they do the Z line ones.
I know what you're about to say, but you can get the ones that are slightly angled so you can.
My point is that with the Moore.
Can we all just say Moore and then I'm going to put it at the end of the podcast? Ready? One, two, three.
Moore.
Look out for that at the end.
So the Moore pedals, they're slightly offset because they're not wide enough for both jack barrels to be at the same height. So they do some cables that do those wrap cables that aren't cables. They're just jack to jack, like angle jack to angle jack.
I think as well is if you don't put your pedals on a pedal board or they're just on the floor and you've got them and you knock them or kick them the way they are, because they're so interlinked, you actually risk damaging
the insides
with the cable. You've got a little bit of flex and a little bit of movement. And actually, I kind of, you know, if you've got a decent buffer at the end of your chain or at the beginning, then using cables is fine.
It's
and
not
you
should that just use the patch extra factories. Cable anyway. I mean, if you've got a pedal train, I mean, if you've got a Diego, then yeah, maybe you're going to have an issue.
But, you know, I think there's, you know,
but at the same time, I quite like. Looking at a messy pedal board, I think it looks.
No, we were talking about this earlier. I mean, yeah.
Obviously.
You know when you watch.
Hoarders, people who are absolutely crazy.
You watch Grand Designs and you're like, yeah, I'd love to build my own house and I'd do that. And you watch other people build the house and you're like, no, you're doing it wrong. I'd build it like that. And I just look at other people with pedal boards going, I definitely wouldn't do it like that.
I used to think like Jay, and now I think like Matt, and I think it was because the guitarist in my band uses 20-something pedals.
In your brand?
In my brand, yeah, in my brand. He uses 20-something pedals, and his pedal board is very messy, which is fine, right up until you're about to start a gig, and he plugs in and he's like,
oh, cool, something doesn't work.
And you look down at this pedal board that is just this mess of stuff. And you're
he should pay me to just do it, and I'll do it.
I keep telling him that.
That's just not being salesy, but that's a service you will offer for people, isn't it? Like,
sure, pay me.
I mean, as part of the shop, like if someone's buying a load of pedals and a pedal board.
A really nice girl bought a pedal train the other day, and we put in the Voodoo Labs underneath, and then told her how to put all the leads in and what order to do it. And then people get stuck, like generally get stuck, then. Like, don't just come to me with all the pedals you've bought and you've had for years with load of messy cable.
No, but like, if
I'm not going to sit there. I mean, I will sit there and clean them. And I probably will enjoy it.
How much would you charge for putting a pedal board together and cutting all the cables?
How much money have you got, Joe?
I don't know, man. I'm asking
20,
for my guitarist.
What, for 20 pedals?
Yeah. 20,
that's a week off work.
27 pedals.
I have done it for people before.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm asking. I'm asking for a price because it's his birthday. I'm
asking for a mate.
Well, maybe. Just Facebook me, PM me.
All right.
I served a fella in the shop earlier this week who came in and went, oh, I want to buy a Boss flanger, please. And I went, yeah, sure, man, sure. And I said, do you need anything else? Do you need any cables, stuff like that? And he went, no, I've got the Boss BCB 60. I've got everything. I was like, oh, wicked, great. And he went, so I don't think I've got any more space. I was like, oh, you need to think about getting another pedal board. And he was like, oh, maybe. And then we just started talking about what pedals he's got, and then we started talking, as you would inevitably move on to, which order he's got his pedals.
Okay.
And he told me which order he had his pedals in, and I was like, oh man, you've got this all wrong.
Okay.
And like, spent a bit of time telling him why things needed to go where, and then and I was like, you've got all Boss pedals, that's cool, man. Like, and he went, yeah, they're sort of the best, aren't they? They're sort of, I mean, what else would you recommend? And I went, I mean, how much do you know about pedals? He went, well, I mean, I've just seen, and I just went, just have a listen to our podcast.
Really?
just have a little listen, and we'll go for it. So if you're listening, hello. I assume you've bought all of the Strymon pedals by now. Like,
welcome to a brand new addiction.
Yes.
Because you're now on the inside, and there's no escaping.
No,
absolutely. And you know, it as we've said many times, we have absolutely, you'll never hear a bad word from us about Boss, about anything that Boss do. No. But I think we sometimes get a little bit blinded by the fact that, you know, a lot of people do just see Boss as like the only pedal company.
And we've talked about it so many times in the past, but up until the last maybe 6 or 7 years, we pretty much didn't sell anything else. We did Electro-Harmonics, we did Proco Rats, we did the Whammy, and then we did Boss stuff.
Yeah.
And that was it. You know, we used to have one board mounted to the wall that had all the Electro-Harmonics on it, and we had one board with all of the Boss.
Okay.
And then,
I mean, what was your first drive pedal?
For me, Big Muff.
Oh, right, fine. I mean, that broke the chain
immediately.
But I was expecting everyone to say DS1 or an SD1.
Yeah.
DS1, SD1, or maybe the Blues Driver.
Yeah.
One of the three.
Yeah,
and that would be the case.
Yeah, but yeah, like you say, I guess there are people who don't know that there's other stuff. But yeah, if you're listening for the first time, great. Just drop us an email or say join the Facebook group, and we'll talk about some serious pedal.
We will meet you on the Facebook.
Indeed. Stuart says, having just listened to the podcast from the warmth and comfort of a sunbed overlooking Sharks Bay in Sharm El Sheikh, approximately 24 degrees.
Okay.
I'd like to put this out to the group. What happens when your wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, significant other suggests a 2-week holiday in the sun far away from your beloved guitars? Do you miss not playing, or do you actively hunt out a guitar shop?
Well, I'd like to firstly point out that sort of level of degrees is a bad condition for a guitar to be in. So, I mean, I'm happier here.
Okay, fine. I probably would say that I'll just not play guitar for 2 weeks and go on a nice holiday.
Yeah, that's because you don't care about guitar.
I love guitars. I
genuinely really miss it. Like, if I haven't played, I start thinking about like pedal orders, and then my brain starts to hurt.
Well, you know, I went to Berlin a week before last, or whenever. I did.
Oh, you won't just shut up about it, will you, Joe? I'm always going on about it.
All right.
I did
craft work.
I did. Carry on. I went to Checkpoint Guitars in Checkpoint Charlie. Went and checked that out.
What? Guitars and that?
There's a guitar shop called Checkpoint Guitars.
Really?
By Checkpoint Charlie. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I went and checked that out. Yeah, it's pretty good. Basically full of Hofner, but yeah,
right,
it was totally wicked.
Okay,
so I loved it. But.
Yeah, I mean, I pop in and see. You never know.
Yeah, you know, when I've been to America, occasionally popped into shops, but the stuff generally that you'll find, like, unless you go to really specialist shops, it's kind of all the stuff that we have.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They definitely have a greater access to, like, vintage stuff just because it was all made in America and most of it has ended up staying
there. The dream is going into, like, a pawn shop in America and, like, finding in the middle of nowhere and just finding, like, a 59 Les Paul that's just dusty in a corner.
That just won't happen anymore.
No,
that's
no, of course not.
But just imagine the day when that could have happened. Now you just find, like, I think the last time I walked into, like, a cash converter, so I saw some guitars in the window. They had one of those ones shaped like an AK-47. I was like, oh, what is this?
Why didn't you buy that?
An Encore Strat.
Yeah, Marlin Sidewinder.
About 3 years ago, me and Krista went to the London Bass Day.
Yeah.
And we were like, yeah, it's going to be wicked. And we sort of, we walked around there and it took us about, I guess, 45 minutes to do a circuit of the whole thing. And we were like, yeah, we sell everything here.
Yeah, yeah.
We've never been back since, despite the fact that that's such a massive event for bass players. I guess just because we, as four people, are surrounded by all that stuff every day.
Well, that's the thing. Absolutely. I mean, whenever I go on tour and we end up in a city where it's like someone needs to buy some guitar strings or something because they didn't tell me that they were running out of guitar strings, so I didn't pick them up beforehand or whatever. You know, they're like, "Oh, do you want to come check out this guitar shop?" I'm just like,
no,
yeah, no, not really. I'm a bit of a busman. That said, when I have been in the US, I have popped into. I went to an amazing, like, little guitar shop in Westchester, Pennsylvania, where my girlfriend lives, and they had such an incredible, like, array of like vintage Fender amps. And we went when I was last there. We went to a day trip to New York, and I went into a guitar store there, and they had a double cut Les Paul Junior, a 61 double cut Les Paul Junior, and I was just like, oh my God. It didn't have a price tag on it, so I already knew that I definitely couldn't afford it. But I was just like, sorry, man, like that double cut Les Paul Junior, and I think he immediately went, oh, you've A, know what you're talking about, and B, you aren't from around here, so you probably have lots of money. I mean, that was obviously his first mistake. He went,
big mistake.
He went, oh, do you want to give it a go? And I went, nah, man, I'm not gonna waste your time. I just sort of wondered how much it is. And he went, oh yeah, I mean, I've got it on a really good price at the moment. It's just, you know, just seven. And my girlfriend was like, $700? That sounds really good. And I was like,
he doesn't mean that.
Let's just leave. <It's> just...
Yeah. So I mean, like, you are trying to avoid guitar shops generally while I'm away, just because mostly I've seen everything there, and the things I haven't seen I can't afford.
Yeah,
and would definitely
absolutely,
want.
Absolutely.
Mark, you definitely have the most paltry collection of guitars.
That's fine.
And amps out of the four of us.
I don't think that's true.
No, you don't.
I think Matt's got more guitars. I've got more amps.
No, paltry means less, at least.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
I wasn't listening. I heard what I wanted to hear.
Oh yeah, no, sorry. I think.
But I mean, I've slimmed down a lot.
Least amount of gear out of all of us.
Yeah. I mean, I've owned a lot of stuff, but I tend to have a high turnover. Like, I don't hang on to stuff very long. I just kind of fly through it, really. Or I do some stuff. Like that Junior and that bass I've had for 12 years each.
Your American standard precision bass.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, just, I know, it's, yes, okay. The bass that I talk about all the time.
What guitar is
it? First time podcast.
It's a Les Paul Junior, yeah. Oh yeah, I've had it for 12 years, but it's not an F-phone, it's a Gibson Les Paul Junior. No, it's a single cut.
Oh, okay.
Sunburst.
Oh, okay.
P90.
Oh, P90, okay.
Yeah, I've had those for 12 years each, but the rest of the stuff turns over quite a lot. So, anyway, Fryn says, how many frets is enough? 21, 22, or 24? Other numbers are available.
15.
There's also an Ibanez with 30. My personal preference is that 22 is much more convenient than 21 for traditional designs, and 24 is gravy. Matt Knight.
Do you know what? It's just one thing I've never thought about.
Yeah.
I know it sounds weird, but I just never thought about it. Like, playing a guitar, I never think, oh, this is it's got 22 frets rather than 24, or you know, scale length. It's something that I know about, obviously, selling guitars, but when I'm playing them, I'm like, if it's there and I like the guitar, I like the guitar. If I don't. It's...
21 or 22 has never, I've never even noticed most of the time. You know, like some Strats have the overhang fret.
51 P basses had 20.
Did they?
Pretty sure. Said that like it was a question, and I thought it was common knowledge. I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, quite possibly, yeah. I mean, it's not, again, it's something that I barely pay attention to. Like, you obviously notice when someone's 24th fret.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, so...
Just if you need to go that high, just let the guitarist play it.
Like. Yeah, I mean, it's as long as it's got the first seven, yeah. It doesn't really matter how the rest of them are.
Pete on the Facebook group said he plays bass. He's a friend of ours, and he plays bass, and he went, 2 strings, 12 frets. And I was like, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, that'll do.
I think the highest I go is 17.
I never go higher than 13, I think, on anything that I play on my guitar. I've definitely never gone that high on my bass.
But yeah, so the Ibanez, what is it, 30 fret, Matt? Is that the one?
Ibanez do a 30 fret.
It looks so odd, doesn't it?
It looks weird because
it's a showpiece.
The fretboard
kind of just goes
into the guitar to a ridiculous amount.
Yeah.
There was that Ibanez bass that we did a very, very short video of at Headstock that got really slaughtered.
Terra Firma, yeah, BTB Terra Firma.
Because you could get really high up the neck on that.
That's a single cut bass.
The single cut one.
They also actually released a fretless bass where the fretboard runs right into the body. I had no frets.
No frets.
The opposite. But the equivalent of having.
So I guess the answer is, it kind of, for any of us, does it really matter?
I think guitars with 24 frets feel weird. Everything feels a bit further away, and the same can be said for basses with that.
I just think my playing is like not technical enough for that to matter at all. If you've got a 24 fret, it does feel a bit weird, but I will never play that high, so it kind of doesn't make any odds. So. Joe says, I'm about to jump into uncharted territory. Stereo. I have a birthday coming up and I'd like to treat myself to some Strymon gear, but I want to go all out with a stereo setup. I'm currently running a Fender 65 Deluxe and a Weber California speaker, and I'm gauging my options as to which combos would be best to blend it with. I've been experimenting with my bass amp, a Fender Rumble 100 in the mix. Been thinking about an AC15. Any thoughts? For those that run 2-amp setups, which amps in unison are your favourite? Any concerns with stereo setups?
I would say, personally, if you're going to run stereo, so you're going to run them all the time, buy 2 amps that do drive very well, if that's your thing, or do clean very well. Because some people go, I'll run a stereo setup with a slightly more driven amp and a cleaner amp. And it's like, no, because then...
That's not stereo.
Everything sounds... One side always sounds slightly more distorted or...
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've got a Fender Deluxe, I wouldn't necessarily pair it with like a Marshall 74.
AC30 though? Or AC15?
AC15 would probably be a good one.
For me, the sort of the dream right now... Now I've got that Supersonic 22, which I absolutely adore. I would love to get an AC15 hand-wired C1X to pair it with. And you know, I guess if you're running the Fender, it's probably going to be relatively clean, so you probably don't want the Alnico Blue, which is what the X denotes in that.
They're a bit more drivey, right?
They are. They're very, very drivey. But the Greenback that you get in the AC15, and they're cheap at the moment, man. $399
for an
AC15.
Mm. Wow,
it's bonkers how cheap they are. Absolutely bonkers. In fact, it's probably cheaper to buy a AC15 and then just buy an Alnico Blue.
Yeah.
At the moment,
we would ever advise you.
No,
within your 2 years warranty.
No, but I don't know why they're so cheap at the moment. It's completely crazy.
$399.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's such a great amp.
If they weren't still too loud to use in my house,
well,
I'd be tempted to buy one.
But I think if you, because they've got the, you know, you've got the volume, you've got the master volume on it, you can get like, I think it's difficult to get a decent clean sound out of them at a very low volume, but I think you can get a good drive sound out of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be a great pairing, a really, really great pairing. Or if you want something a bit more dynamic and you want to spend a little bit more money, Mesa Boogie Express 525 Plus. Yeah. I've said that the wrong way around. I'm like, Mesa Boogie...
Actually, I like 525 Plus. What about the Rectiverb? Because that's quite Fendery. It's got to have big splashy reverb in it.
Yep.
That'd be quite nice.
And they do, there's like a little combo now, isn't it? Because they used to do the big Rectiverb, but they do the small one.
And actually, the only concern is having a decent AB box or ABY. Because you can buy cheap ones.
Why not? Because if you're running,
a good ABY. It's just a channel selector. Why do you need a
ground
good
lift?
One?
Yeah. Well, actually, if you're running out of something like a Strymon,
that's what I was going to say. If you're,
but then again, but you can still get it because you're still creating a, you know, like a ground loop, aren't you?
Yeah.
So sometimes you should go out of one into like either a DI box and go straight through, but then just lift the ground off. That works sometimes.
Have you seen a pedal board with a DI on it for that reason?
No, but you can't. My AB box has got an ABY. Okay. It's an ABY, with a ground lift and a phase inversion as well.
Is that the one I borrowed for that?
Does the Switchblade Plus have that?
No.
We've never had any problems with.
No,
that.
So sometimes you don't. Some amps are fine. Some aren't.
I think with something like that, if you need to be careful with you need to sort of any of the other bits and pieces that could affect it. So like plug your pedals into. And I think this is really important. I say this all the time, as though it's like, yeah, of course, like it's common knowledge, but a lot of people are like, oh, really? Plug, if you're using a load of stuff, plug into a surge protected four-way.
Definitely. Yeah.
Because, you know, I bought one from the hardware store down the end of the street from where we work. £8.
Yeah, definitely worth it.
It's it's no money.
I mean,
I think it regulates the current a little bit better, from anything.
Maybe that is a good idea. My guitarist amps are literally like, all the time, but it's not making that noise when it's playing. So
yeah, you're quite a noisy band, though. Like, a noisy as in, like, there's a lot of noise going on.
As in, rubbish.
As in, like, yeah, you're a dreadful
quite
band.
A bit like, your nan will go, oh, they're a bit noisy.
A bit noisy. But you know, I've got those surge protected power supplies. I've got my computer and my television and Xbox and record player all plugged into surge protected power supplies. I use it at home. So you definitely want, and like at home when I know that the current is like pretty solid. You know, if you're playing in like a dirty downstairs venue in Dalston,
yeah,
like
you, with mirrored walls,
yeah, you definitely want to be plugged into a surge protected power supply.
I definitely did that night.
You know, Power Lunches is a great venue. No, yeah, it is not casting any aspersions.
We've got loads more questions. Matt, do you need to go?
I've got like 15 minutes.
Okay, all right, let's do a couple more questions, I think,
and then we can and then we do the super long one next week.
Yeah, we're going to do a long podcast next week. Episode 100.
100 hours.
Yeah, we're going to do an hour. We're going to just basically
stitch.
There's
only one question next week.
We're going to stitch all of the previous episodes together just to make one super long podcast. We're not going to do that.
Oh my God, we have something special for episode 100.
Yeah, episode 100 is going to be good. You need to stick around. Anyway, so Sam says, what's the point?
Definitely not.
Sam says, what's the point in digital delays? Why would you not just have a multi-effects unit if you're not bothered about it being analog?
Matt Knight, how long did you say you've got? 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, probably we're only going to answer one question.
I read this question, I was like, I'm slightly confused.
Okay.
So you're saying that basically if you're not having an analog delay pedal, why
not just have a multi-effects?
Yeah, it sounds like he's assuming that analog is better than digital and that's the end of it.
Yeah, but then what confused me is that what if you've got other pedals on your pedal board and you're like, well, I don't want all the other pedals because I don't want a multi-effects because I've already got all the other.
Yeah,
but it's not just that. Analog and digital delays do very different things.
Yeah, and they do both do very different things very, very well. Yeah.
I mean, I to a certain degree, I understand where this question is coming from because personally, I prefer the sound of an analog delay. But I am never going to need the precision that you would get from a digital delay.
Yep.
You know, I've got one friend of mine in particular who plays in like quite a big metal band. He needs his delays and his trails to be spot on. You know, for a while he used the DD20, now he's got a Strymon Timeline, and you know, it's very, very important that the delays are exactly at the correct
It's not like a one's better than the other. It's like one is suitable for completely different things.
Yeah.
Like I'm the same as you. I would only ever use analog delays. I find the digital's too precise.
Well, yeah, but like that's what some people need.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And actually, the genre that you mentioned, metal, is quite specifically a genre that needs digital delay that wouldn't be able to work with analog delay.
Imagine trying to get your carbon copy to get to the exact point that you'd need it to for you know, it just it wouldn't work
for like harmonizing and, with the delays and stuff like
just
that.
Just because it's digital doesn't mean that that it's always the same. It doesn't mean that the digital delay that you get on a multi-FX is going to be the same as one you'd get on an individual stomp box.
Well, I mean, that again, I think there's an argument for that not being completely true, depending on, you know, if you're looking at like a DD7 in comparison to like a GT100, for example, you know, you're going to be getting the same.
True, but the parameters that you have available to you and how precise you're able to make it certainly vary from pedal to pedal, and I think.
I mean, I always like having like an analog delay and a digital delay on the pedal board, because I'll use.
Of course you
do. But yeah, I use analog, you know, I use analog for maybe a more washy, ambient-y sort of thing. But then if I'm going to play like some lead, I'd rather have a digital delay and have it much lower in the mix because it fills out the sound without.
So you've got your timeline as your digital. What's your analog delay?
Well, actually, I use the timeline for both because I think it covers both very well.
Analog sounding digital. It, you know, it's like the TC Electronic.
Actually, for
that
a long
I've got
time,
my
but for a long time I had the timeline and a DD3. But then when I was trying to save on space, I just went down to.
I think a really good pairing is like a carbon copy and a DD3.
I've recently
changed over to carbon copy. I was using an Ibanez 89 for the longest time.
I mean, obviously, you guys are all glossing over the pinnacle of guitar engineering, which is the RE20.
Everyone, take a shot.
The thing is, though, the you know with that, like, because I, you know, I've got a 201. And you never want to turn it off.
He had to. Like, he just had to do it.
Well, just had to one up, I mean, of course.
I know what you mean, Jay. I know what you mean, but of course.
But I mean, know how good your analog model digital delay pedal is. But when you actually hear it through tape, I just think, God, Jay would be so pleased right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, see, I understand where you're coming from. But when I run my my RE20 through my valve-driven WEM copycat. You know, it's
Jay, you know that doesn't one up us.
It doesn't at all.
Matt says, are there any fairly cheap volume pedals out there? I can't really stretch to much more than £70 at the moment. I'm trying to save for a Big Sky. So, best volume pedal for £70?
Boss FE30. Yep. The new one.
Is it
the
out
mini
yet?
One. We haven't had any yet, but they are on their way.
Okay, because I was going to say the FE500.
Yeah, but the thing is now they've gone, oh yeah, they are really good.
They are very big.
They are very big.
We've made
really
them
big.
Very small.
They don't even fit on the
BCBs.
The BCBs.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Really? As me and Packham discovered.
They do not.
Me and Mark discovered when trying to fit one onto a board. And we were like, oh, hold on. This fits a crybaby.
No, that can't be true.
Yeah, it's true.
When you unscrew the bad boys?
Yes.
Yeah,
they don't
fit
in.
What I mean.
A normal crybaby will, because they're slightly bigger than a crybaby. So.
That is absolutely bananas.
Yeah, so the new one's called the FV30, and it'll be here, in a month or so?
Yeah,
something
I think
like
so.
That.
Something like that.
And it's
I think
a little bit bigger than a Boss Compact.
I think
it's
69 quid.
Yeah, that's the one to look out for.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, Sai says, I'm looking for a pedal board that can accommodate 5 pedals, EHX, MXR, and Boss sizes. I run on batteries, so pedal power is not necessary, and must have non-permanent mounts. So I assume he means Velcro.
Pedal Train Junior.
Yeah.
Or Pedal Train Nano, depending on...
he said five, didn't he?
Yeah, you can put 5 pedals on a Pedal Train Nano.
Yeah, probably just about. I mean, I'd rather have two tiers.
Definitely, you could definitely fit more on.
I wouldn't rather have two tiers. I'd rather have a really long, straight pedal board.
Diago Commuter?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Diago Commuter's very good.
Nah, Pedal Train's better.
I mean, I agree. I think that even if you're not using the two tiers, I think having the slanted, having it slanted works is a better feature. But I spoke to someone just today who looked at the commuter. It wasn't big enough, and so I showed them the pedal train too, and he went, I don't want two tiers. I want it all.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Which is why the new range,
two tier would be desirable.
And also the slant. He wasn't into the slant as well. I mean, I quite like the slant.
Mm. Yeah, I'd like it's slanted but longer.
Well, I think
one straight row.
Also, it allows you to, you know.
To what?
Sort of lunge. Not lunge.
Put your foot up, like, do a proper guitar solo.
Yeah. Lunge? Is that the word I'm looking for?
Yeah. Lunge. Fine, yeah.
Eat lunch.
Last question of the week of podcast 99 comes from Adam, and I want one answer from each of you. Adam says, what's your favourite movie guitar? Mine is Samuel L. Jackson's Pink 335 in Black Snake Moan. I've not seen that movie, but I saw a picture and that guitar does look wicked. Joe Branton.
Oh no, don't come to me first, come to me last.
Matt Knight.
I was trying to think about this all podcast and
wait, you can come to me first, I've got it.
Go on.
I'm going to go for Scott Pilgrim's Rickenbacker
4003. God, how cool is that part? Yeah, it's great.
Specifically after it's been duct taped back together. That's when it's at its coolest.
Is that that's after he fights the vegan police?
Yeah,
right?
That's right. And he gets smashed through a wall.
Stop looking at me.
He does fight the vegan police.
Yeah, and actually the fellow he's fighting has a really nice one of the 65 reissue Fender Mustang faces.
He does.
Oh, does he? Oh, for crying out loud.
Do you know the interesting
I've not
thing?
Even thought about that.
The interesting thing about that, which is on the extras on the DVD, the fellow, it's one fellow who recorded both bass parts for that thing. And actually, he said.
Michael Cera?
No.
Michael Cera did it.
No, it's not. That's not true.
Okay.
He got them the wrong way round. So the all the parts that are played by Scott Pilgrim are a Mustang.
Yeah, I think you've said this
before.
And all
the parts that the Mustang bass are being played is a Rickenbacker 4003.
So basically what you're saying is all the guitars and all the nonsense we talk about doesn't even matter. Because no one will notice. Jay Cross, favourite movie guitar? Is it the 65 Mustang bass played by the Vegan Police and Scott Pilgrim?
Can you go with Matt Knight first? I need a couple of seconds.
Matt Knight.
I mean, I kind of don't just want to go with the obvious.
Yeah, Mark Packham's got a great one.
What's the obvious?
Back to the Future.
Yeah, what, go on, Back to the Future guitar?
The guitar that hadn't been invented yet.
You mean the Gibson...
The 345?
Yeah.
It's a 345.
I mean, that is a goddamn cool guitar.
It is a goddamn cool guitar. I mean... We've spoken about this before, how it wasn't actually invented at the time that it was supposed to have been at. But also, he'd come from the future. So, you know, who knows? Anything's possible, you know? That and...
This is your cousin.
That's the best bit. That is the best bit of the entire trilogy.
I mean, that's one of the greatest
it's
scenes
your cousin.
Ever.
Marvin Berry! So good!
Matt Knight, what is your best movie guitar?
I think I might have to go for the Strat in Wayne's World.
Strat. Okay, fair point.
The white Strat, yeah. That's a good idea.
Because someone actually mentioned it in an email today when he's waiting for a custom-built guitar, and he's like, I just keep thinking about Wayne's World 2, and I was like, yeah.
Wayne's World, no, Wayne's World 1.
Wayne's World 1.
Not Wayne's World 2. No guitars in that. Well, there's probably some guitars.
There's probably at least one guitar.
So I've got two picks. They both come from the Back to the Future trilogy. The first one.
Why did I not think of this?
So the first one, and this is a bit obscure, it's from Back to the Future 3 when ZZ Top are playing and they've got drums and guitars that spin round on a belt. So they're just playing and then halfway through the song the guitar spins round and he catches it again. Incredible. But my main one is from the beginning of Back to the Future 1.
Why didn't I think of course?
Where he's playing a tiny little travel guitar. And it's either Washburn or Aria, something like that. And it's when he plugs into the giant speaker. And it's just.
What do you reckon that speaker is? I'm going for 30, 40, 50.
Probably
inches?
Bigger than that, 60.
It's just that, like, that hum. Like, I would turn that on before I went to bed.
Me and Mark were watching the clip of it today. And we were watching the clip of all the controls that he turns up to full. And they say things like, primary driver.
Yeah. Overdriver. But the thing is, so he plugs into the amp before he plugs into the guitar. Which, if you think about it... It would have just blown up at that point. It's so stupid. Just a simple edit, they could have sorted that out.
He turns everything up to full and then plugs the guitar in.
Yeah, with a simple edit, they could have...
Oh, no, he could have been using one of the silent jacks that only plugs in.
Sorry, mate, they weren't invented then. Back to the Future.
Yeah, maybe Doc Brown went to the future.
Got a silent
came
jack.
Came to GAK, bought some silent jacks from Bigfoot Engineering.
No, that's why he was at CES that year on the Gibson stand. He's buying a couple of silent jack cables. Back to the Future. Done. Thanks for listening to the GAK podcast this week. If you do want to join in, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group, or you can join us on the official GAK Facebook page, facebook.com/GAK music, or on Twitter @GAK_co_UK. Do get in touch with us all individually. Get in touch with me @Mark_random. I want to hear from everyone who's listening. If you've got a Twitter account, just say hi this week. Say hi. Matt Knight, how can people get in touch?
Packham, you didn't tell us how to get in touch with you.
Yeah, I did. At Mark _
Random. Did you say that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were too busy, like, rolling your eyes at me.
Matt Knight, how can people get in touush?
So you can add me on Twitter, Matt_Knighty, that's Knight with S-I on the end, or you can email me, matt.knight@jak.co.uk, and let's talk pedalboard prices. Come to me, I'll wire it for you.
Good.
I'll clean it for you. Just and go, it'll probably be free, because I'll do someone, it at work.
I want someone to go from no pedals to a full Matt Knight constructed pedal board in one hit. Jay Cross, how can people get in touch?
Shoot me an email, j.cross@jak.co.uk, or follow me on the Twitter, JAYBN1. I had a great tweet today from somebody complaining that they followed me on Twitter because they really like the podcast, but they would like to know when the football season finishes so I would stop talking about football.
Ace.
So this week, join me for more football-related
twits. There's a lot of twits.
Loads of twits.
Joe Branton, how can people get in touch?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at mark_random, or you can email me on mark.packham@gak.co.uk. This week, I mostly want to talk about.
Why have you done that?
I'll bleep that. Bye.
Bye. Oh, dear.